The views and opinions expressed by John and DJ do not reflect those of any intelligent or rational human being and are solely the property of the Brightside Chat.
Hey, welcome back to The Bright Side and issue 42, where John and I talk about House of X and Powers of 10. There's a lot of information in these books, and we do our best to unpack as much as we can, as much as we've figured out in the few days we had to read these. We know there's a ton of information we probably missed. So when you're done listening, hit us up on Twitter. There's going to be a lot of conversations happening about this, and this is going to be a lot of fun. So let's get into the store. Hey, John, time flies, and I am back here at Arkham Comics and Games. Jeez.
I know. I don't know if we're going to be able to keep this up every week. That's a lot of flying back and forth.
Time flies. I fly.
Twice
crazy.
A week. Yeah.
I like this, though.
This new schedule has got to be... Your guns are going to be like...
Oh.
I don't even know, man. You're going to be like Arnold.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I wish. Thanks for bringing that up. I think you're making fun of me.
Nah.
So, let's see. Hey, I got to read a couple more books. Did you see Batman Last Night on Earth 2 yet?
Well, I've seen it.
Have you read it? No?
No.
Okay. That one's, of course, that continues on. Much like, you know, no spoilers, but Joker's a riot. Still good.
Yeah.
Actually, I can't wait to talk to you about that one. Maybe we'll talk about it later this week.
Yeah.
And I read another one that I was going to put in our recommended reading last week, but I wasn't too crazy about it, but it was still pretty good. But of the ones that we did last week, this probably came in third or fourth of the ones I was reading. But have you heard of this one, Leave on the Light, number one? Antarctic Press.
I did hear of it. Yeah, I didn't read it, though.
Yeah, it's definitely a horror story.
Okay.
There's you see on the cover an escaped inmate, or you think it's an escaped inmate, that kills children and families. Well, he's back on the loose, but it's a little bit different. Is he on the loose? It's definitely a horror. The artwork wasn't fantastic. It wasn't bad, but there were a few panels that I think they got a little too simplistic on. And I wasn't crazy about.
Yeah.
But early on in the book, I thought the artwork was pretty good. Gave you a really good feel. But it's...
So they ran out of budget towards the end?
Yeah, the special effects. They spent it all in the opening scenes.
Right.
But it's kind of crazy. It's actually a lot crazy. But I am actually gonna grab the second one because I want to see what happens. But it wasn't... Like I said, what did we do last week? We did that Knights one, and Knights Temporal, and Manor Black. Yeah, and those ones were really good. This one was a notch below them. Yeah, I just thought I'd mention it.
Yeah, I sold out of that.
Did you really?
I only had three copies come in, but I sold out of it today.
If you're a horror fan, it's definitely a horror.
Right.
The Redline one that I'm reading... That one I think is better, especially as a horror goes and the twist that one has on it. But this one, it's definitely, if you're a horror fan, it's definitely worth picking up.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to picking up Electric Black number 2 as well, because I really liked
yeah.
the first issue of that. And again, I haven't gotten to it yet, but...
Yeah, same here.
I'm really looking forward
really
to
reading
that
one.
Because I liked
we
it.
Talked,
I
that
did,
was a
I liked
while
it.
Ago, though, wasn't it?
It seemed like it was a long time ago. It feels like there was more than a month between
yeah,
the issues. I'd have to double check, but it feels like a
that
while back.
That was one
back
of our recommended readings, wasn't it? A while back?
It was, yes.
Because when 2 came out, when did that 2 came out like 2 weeks ago, didn't it? Or was it?
No, I think last week.
Okay, last week. Yeah, which was 2 weeks ago. But
yeah.
So when it came out, I was like, really? I thought I'd missed 2. And I thought, when they said, oh, Electric Black, I saw it and grabbed it, and I was like, wait a minute, that's only 2? Because I feel like that, I'll have to look back on that, because it looks like it was a while ago that we read 1.
Well, you know, I mean, we've been reading Doomsday Clock for a year and a half.
True.
We're only on issue 11.
True.
And it took us 7 months to get Batman Damn number 3.
Yeah.
So It's not unheard of for comics to come out late.
Right.
But it does feel like it was a while. I didn't mention this with our news the other day, but the next issue of Shazam just got pushed back for 11 weeks, I think. So
wow.
We're not going to get a new Shazam comic for almost 3 months.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know what goes on with comics that push them back that long, but yeah, it happens. So it's probably just been a while since the first issue.
Right. Did you see or did you get to read at all Batman Who Laughs 7?
No, again, not yet.
So we didn't even talk about 6. Did you read that one?
I did read it. Yeah, I guess we didn't talk about it, but I did read it.
Because I know I never got Joe has my son has the other cop. It has 6. So when Batman Who Laughs came out on Wednesday last week, I read it and I'm like, "Oh, I wish I had 6 on me because there's so much to it." And it is, it's really good, but I have one giant complaint about it. The writing, that red writing inside those charcoal.
I know, it's brutal.
Oh my God. There were times, 7's not as bad, but there were times in 6 I had to use my phone. And I can read some pretty fine writing. It's not, and my wife's like, "Oh, see, you do need glasses." I'm like, "No, try to read this." And it's like, it's bad.
It's really
high. It like hurts. It's just that contrast, and it's not a black in the bubble. You know, it's a charcoal with the red.
Right.
And
Well, and the thing is, too, if you've noticed, Marvel doesn't do this as much, but DC does. Like, every single character has their own assigned word color scheme.
And they did that, but they did that in War of the Realms. Because if you know, like, Asgardians would have that font, and you'd have to...
Right, but they don't do it as much as DC.
Right.
Because, you know, depending on what character, you always know who's talking, because Green Lantern's bubbles are always green.
Green writing, yeah. Or it's a green
around
it.
And the Batman Who Laughs is always going to be that black, that red on black, because it was the same way in Dark Knight's Metal, and I had a tough time reading that. It seems like that's going to be his assigned color scheme from now on.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil Batman Who Laughs, but it kind of changes. You'll see.
I will almost not read it.
It's hard.
That's what happens going forward.
Honestly, when I was reading 6, I almost like threw the thing down. I was so mad.
Yeah, it's like I'm done.
But the content is so good. I really enjoy the content, but it's just so difficult to read. And you're like, I mean, apparently I got to ask for an old man version. Can I just get the, you know, a white one, white subtitles right. or something? Like white bubble subtitles, please?
They should come packed with a magnifying glass.
Yeah. It's really tough. But all right. What was the cover? Red Hood, the variant last week. Who was on that who did that cover?
Oh man. I don't remember.
Philip Tan?
Yeah, Philip Tan.
Yeah, okay. That cover was really nice. And that's the FOC today. But yes. That cover was really... I like him jumping. It's like, what is he... if I remember right, he's like kind of jumping through almost at you. Almost like a Silver Surfer pose. Let me see if I can pull it up. Yeah, no, he's just jumping. For some reason, his foot looked like a surfboard. I'm looking at it right now.
Right.
But no, he's just jumping with the lightning behind him. It's a really cool cover. Really cool cover. This week's topic, Powers of X, House of 10.
The other way around. It's House of X, Powers of 10.
Oh, okay. I think you know what I meant.
I did, but maybe our listeners did not. So,
what do you want to do? You want to just do the whole thing, or you want to do book by book? Because there is so much to unpack, and I'm hoping you know what you're talking about.
Well, there is a lot to unpack, but I feel like we should talk about House of X first, at least in the beginning.
Yes.
And talk about the tone and what we thought was going to happen until this week when we got Powers of 10 came out.
Right.
So I guess just to back up a little bit further, you know, they've been talking about this series of books for a few months now and really building it up as a change from the status quo, you know, that we've had with the X-Men over the last decade or so.
So check that box off.
And yes, I think that, like it or not, or, you know, love it or not, it definitely did that. This has changed the X-Men. I mean, you can't say forever because it's comics. Like, you don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
when Hickman's done. But I mean, it has changed the landscape of the X-Men for the foreseeable future, and it is very different from anything we've ever seen with them. It is not like it's not fan service. It's not like, you know, like people complain about The Force Awakens just being a copy of A New Hope.
Right.
This is not a copy of the old X-Men stories that we used to love. It is a completely different take, and Hickman's done something, I think, pretty impressive with both of these books. But I guess, like I said, we can jump into House of X first.
Could you say it's almost a more adult feel to it?
Definitely is. Like, I don't think these are the books that you're 11 to 13 year old reader would love to jump into and start reading. These are more cerebral.
Yes, it's not an adult in a way like you know.
There's not no right. They're not adult themed.
No, but it's I mean, and maybe my mind is on like a 13 to 15 year old level because I am having a hard time grasping a lot of this.
Yeah,
and so that's why I say this is way more adult, and it's. I mean, it's very in-depth, as we said, you know, last week, tons of, for weeks now, we've been saying tons of information.
Right.
But yeah, it's definitely more of an adult feel. The artwork is more adult. The costume, you know, their costumes are more adult. And again, not in an adult like that. It's just
right,
more
again,
mature.
None of,
just.
Right. None of this is to say it's like NC-17 or R-rated.
No, not at all.
It's not
nope.
that at all. It's just very, it seems like it's a, you know, again, and I don't want to say it's aimed at adults because it may not be, but it feels very deep. And
yeah.
Like I said, as a, you know, if I take myself back in time to when I was 10 or 11 reading comic books, I don't know that these issues would have
been.
The
blue and yellow is gone. The,
right.
You know, the.
Exactly.
There's more detail in the drawings. There's more, you know, in the artwork. You know, just look at the two covers. You know, they're very detailed, and that's what it's like throughout the book.
Right, and you know, and again, and we'll get into this a little bit more here in a minute. But you had a very different sense after reading House of X of where you thought the story was going to go.
Right,
and then it changed completely with Powers of Ten. But what that means to me now is that you could tell that this is not something like. Like, Hickman might have got assigned the X-Men 6 months ago or whatever, but this is something that's been brewing for him probably for years.
Yes.
Like, this is something that you feel like is very, very deep, and you didn't just come up with this on the fly.
Yeah.
Like, it's something that he's either wanted to tell for a very long time, or he's just that talented that he put it together. But this is going to be a very deep world, and we're only two issues into this 12-issue. Well, really, more than 12-issue story, because it goes on from here when it's done. We don't know what's coming, but you know that this world is plotted, and like this is very well thought out.
Yep.
And there's definitely timelines that I think will be explored as we go along that get introduced in the Powers of Ten.
That's a great, great segue. I don't know if you meant that, but the timeline on these books.
Right.
The opening pages of, and this is spoiler loaded, so, you
yes.
know.
Yeah.
But the opening pages of House of X.
Right.
It's 5 months ago, 4 months, and I won't read, it's, well, Krakoa, five months ago, Krakoa, 4 months ago, right. Westchester. And then it says 3 months ago, and they all have locations, 2 months ago, 1 month ago, 3 weeks ago. Those are the panels. And then you jump to Powers, and instead of locations, it opens up same way in the same type of panels that run across the page, and it says XO, the X-Men year one, the dream. X1, the X-Men year 10. So now they're giving you time periods, and it goes all the way to X-Men 3, year 1000.
Right. And so what I liked about that is, like, when we talked about House of X last week, we touched on it, you know, because we didn't go into spoilers, but one of the things I talked about was that it felt like you were jumping in the middle of the story.
Right.
Like, you were in a position where you didn't exactly know how they got to where they got to. this was answered a little bit this week with Powers of 10, because now you know you're in year 10 of the X-Men. House of X takes place in year 10 of the X-Men.
Right.
But you didn't know that last week.
Right.
You didn't really know where you were. So I like that this kind of set up the time frame of, so you know the X-Men have been around for about 10 years before they come to Krakoa.
Right.
And then obviously in Powers, you know, it's spoilers, so we'll jump ahead a little bit. But then you start to see the year 100 timeline and the year 1000 timeline.
Right.
But you know why Xavier is a little bit younger in House of X, because it's in year 10 of the X-Men.
Right.
You know.
So if that, I mean, that being the case, yes, he is, they are revamping the entire X-Men world.
Exactly. It's completely changing. Hickman has come out and said that while you don't have to have any prior reading, like there's no knowledge necessary to jump into this series, you don't have to know the X-Men at all. But he has also said that, like, past things that have happened aren't thrown away. Like,
right.
The history will still matter. It just won't be necessary to understand anything that's gone on. But I don't think they're going to undo every, you know, it's not like they've said everything that's ever happened with the X-Men, we're just flushing it down the toilet and pretending like it didn't happen. But you don't know how much of it will have happened. Like, you don't know what's going to be touched on again in these stories, but...
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I almost feel like what he said, like, that line of thinking is, okay, I'm going with the characters. I'm not going to change the characters and their feel or their originality. But they're, like, just for instance, like, Professor X is, Xavier is walking. He's going to change,
right.
He might change their costumes, he might change their, what happens to them, but the characters will all be the same for, through history. So, like,
right.
We see Wolverine in Powers, but it's not the same, he doesn't look the same, clearly, because it's older.
It's 100 years, yeah.
You know, but even the characters you see in House, they don't look the same either. You know, like right. Cyclops has, they have different, like we alluded to earlier, they have different costumes and stuff.
So well, let's go back. So
okay.
let's jump into this a little bit from the beginning. So House of X opens, and let's look at, like, so the first thing says, it's like Professor X is, he's sending out a telepathic message to
the world.
Humanity. Basically saying, while you were sleeping, the world has changed.
How'd you like to get your news that way?
Exactly, right? Well, that's how we're going to get it in, you know, 20 years from now anyways, probably. But so then you turn to the next page, and that's where it starts to show the different timelines of Krakoa, I guess.
Right.
But the very first panel is Xavier, and he's, I don't know, is he, like, pulling his X-Men from the primordial cocoons? Or, like, I don't really understand what's going on in that the beginning of that book. Like, you know, because he says, come to me, my X-Men, and they're crawling out of these cocoons or something that it looks like they were sleeping in. And, like, are they, I mean, were they gestated in these cocoons? Were they born? Like, I don't know what's going on there, you know?
Well, here's the thing. That's one of the interesting things, that you've got to jump to the end of Powers. And the end of Powers has, for all intents and purposes, Adam and Eve.
Right. And,
Adam and Eve at the end of Powers is, I mean, and I feel bad jumping back and forth like this, but this is kind of what these books do. And it's like, so the end of Powers, you have Adam and Eve being reborn, but at the end of House, you have Magneto saying to the world, you love your religions, you love this, well, there's a new God. I feel a very, very deep religious tone to both of these books. It's subtle, but it's there. And,
right.
I mean, they end with Adam and Eve because in Powers, in the thousand years, humans are gone.
Right.
They've eliminated. So it's like, but now they're coming back. You know, so it's, how are they coming? And what I was left with there is, how are they coming back?
Right, we don't know.
What they said, what I thought was funny is, at the end of House, Magneto is saying, you love your religion, you know, humans, you love your religions, you love this. Well, there's a new God. There's new gods, us, right? Right. Well, at the end of Powers, the new, what are supposed to be the new gods are saying, and hope to God they never have dominion again. So now the mutants are, for all intents and purposes, speaking to God. But in the other book, you know what I mean? And it's, I don't think, with his writing, I don't think that's a coincidence, obviously. So yeah. It's, that I thought was weird. It's, and how does that play out?
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I didn't understand the beginning of that panel, you know, the beginning of House of X. Like, I don't understand that beginning there. The rest of the pages I understand, you know, they go to, you know, Krakoa, they go to,
well, you saw
know,
they're giving out seeds today. Maybe that's how X-Men were made. Is he growing them?
Well, that's what I'm saying, because, you know, traditionally, you know, mutants were just babies.
They,
you know,
just,
they were just people
were,
that were born that had
it was a mutation of a human.
But they were all, they weren't immaculately birthed. They weren't grown in test tubes or anything like that. I mean, they were legitimate. I mean, they were regular people born, you know, regular people way. But this seemed to, I don't know if it was changing that or if maybe that was something that they had to do to build Krakoa. Like, I don't know exactly what's going on there, but it seemed, or maybe it was just a metaphor.
Right.
You know, it might not have even been literal. But I just thought that that was weird because you think of, you know, they always talk about the beginning of life and crawling out of the primordial ooze. And that's what that felt like to me. Like, he was calling them out of the ooze, but as full-fledged, fully grown beings.
Right.
So I don't know what was going, I don't really know what was going on there, but that was really such a little part of the book that it didn't really stay with me very long, but.
Well, then you have in the opening pages when the ones where the white pages with the definitions, and you have the flowers of Krakoa, and it says the mutant island of Krakoa is not just the home of mutants and the seat of their nation state. It is also the only known producer of the primary economic resource of the mutant nation, the flowers of Krakoa. Right. So is that what they're referencing?
That's what I'm saying. Is it a metaphor? You know, I'm not really sure what's going on there, but, you know, again, we're going to get into spoilers, so we'll just, you know, we'll start to break this down. So, you know, the book begins with Xavier sending a message out to all of humanity saying that, you know, your world has changed. And then, you know, it kind of flashes forward to, you know, some of the leaders of the different, you know, representatives of the different countries who are being called to meet with Xavier. You know, so he's basically...
He's a nation. Krakoa is its own nation.
He's set up this nation of Krakoa, which has the most perfect defense system ever realized, because unless you're a mutant and carry the X gene, you physically cannot enter the nation.
Right.
Any harm that's going to happen to these mutants is going to come from within. So it's got a perfect defense system, and he's basically saying, look, we want to be recognized as a sovereign nation state. And this is what we're going to offer you if you work with us. We're going to give you these pharmaceuticals that are made with the flowers of Krakoa.
Right.
Right. So there's a pill that adds 5 years to your life, which that, you know, just kind of physically speaking, how does that work?
Right.
Like, if I get hit by a car, do I still get 5 years added to my life because I took this pill? Like, oops, you didn't die? I don't know how that pill necessarily works.
And how do you know it works? Like, even if you live out your life and you die...
You didn't know that you were supposed to die 5 years earlier than that. You never know.
Yeah.
And you can't really fact check it because you're dead.
Right.
So, anyways, that pill was a little weird to me. But the other one was basically a cure-all. Like, it's like the super antibiotic that will cure pretty much anything, you know. And I think that's really the one that... would be the most beneficial to people. But that's also the one that you would think that most of these governments aren't really going to be on board with, because countries make money off of people getting sick and dying. they don't want there to be pills that cure everything.
Right.
You know? So I don't know how that's
But that's
really
the one he's holding over their head, though.
But that's the one that it seems like everybody's interested in. But I was thinking that...
Well, you're thinking reality.
Like, to me, But in reality, that's not the one that... Any economy, like, that would tear down the U.S. economy if the pharmaceutical industry disappeared, right?
Well, only
either that or they just
yeah.
Either that or these pills become, you know, I guess $10,000 a pill because you only need one of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So maybe insurance doesn't cover that, but. And I forget what the third pill does. It seems like it was similar to the second pill. It was like a super antibiotic and a super vitamin or something.
Well, once you have the second pill, what else do you need?
Right. That's what I'm saying. I don't know why you needed the third one.
Right.
But anyway, so Xavier's offering these medical miracles to the world in exchange for them, you know, recognizing them as a nation state.
Yeah.
But you kind of get the feeling as you go through towards the end of the book that it doesn't matter whether they – like, they're going to go along no matter what, because they're either going to go along willingly and he's going to give them the pills, or they're going to not go along and Magneto's going to come by and he's going to force them to go along. So I don't think it's really an option for anybody. And I think that's what these three people are coming to realize, is that we might as well just say yes and get the benefits, because we've already lost. Like, this has already happened.
Right.
You know, he's already got this nation. That's what ended up, like, to me, that's what was now, like, the biggest change for the X-Men. Because they have this now safe place to be. Everything seems very hopeful to them.
Well, that's the difference, is, like, in the past, it was always, like, they were always in fear of the world.
Right.
And now they've taken that fear out, because right. Hickman's given them their own location, so they have nothing to fear there.
Right.
And what's happening is the X-Men are actually on the offensive, meaning
right.
like, look, we have all this. You need to recognize who we are.
Right.
Almost like we are a superpower, where this
right.
little tiny island in the South Pacific, which they show you on one of the pages where it's located, but they have all the power. And
right.
that, so, like, if, could you say, like, House of X is, we're showing, like, that whole book is just, I don't know, it's like, almost like showing who they are, who, like, it just, like, quickly showing you in one book how powerful they are, who they are, and where they stand in the world.
Well, yeah, it's definitely setting that up, but what I thought, again, was interesting and different to the status quo is that I feel like in this book, Charles Xavier is Magneto, right? Like, he's become
yes.
Magneto. And I think that's why you wonder why Magneto is going, you know, why they're working together in harmony. And it's because Charles has basically become Magneto, as opposed to Magneto becoming Charles. Because he's now saying, look, we are the dominant, like, we are Homo superior. Like, we're
right.
the dominant species on this planet. And he's not coming at it in a sense of violence necessarily, but he's setting it out there and making it known that, look, this, it's our way or the highway, and this is what's going to happen.
Right.
Magneto
and Xavier have always been, obviously through the years, have always been friends, but
right.
their outlook on humanity has been obviously opposite of each
right.
other. You know, Xavier has always wanted to work with humanity and trust in the good in humanity. And Magneto
right.
has always been, like, on the defensive, and almost like a good defense, you know, the best defense is a good offense.
Exactly.
But where in this incarnation here, Xavier has eliminated, or maybe it's not just him, but the work that they've done has eliminated everything that Magneto has always been afraid of. So
right.
that puts them on the same panel. And I felt the same way as you, that it almost felt like Charles was what, you know, Eric was.
Right.
You know, but now he's
same,
not. But at the end of the book,
they've always had the same goal.
Right.
They just always had a different
right.
way to get there.
But in this book, you know? It almost felt like Charles was threatening humankind.
Right.
Where he never did that in the past. Where I don't necessarily think he was threatening. I think he was still being – I still think he's good. I just think it's like we're not used to him being on the – having – flaunting his powers, if you will.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, that's right. That's what I was trying to say, is that he's laying it down. Like I said,
right.
he's saying this is how it is and this is how it's going to be. And like you said, in the past he was always – you know, again, a little bit afraid of humanity and afraid of the humans, you know, and
I don't think he was afraid of them. I think he could have squashed them like a bug at any time.
But was afraid to assert that position of power, I guess. Like, always felt like they had to operate from, maybe not the shadows, but,
well,
you
I
know,
d-
like, they had to...
I always felt Xavier was always holding back because he didn't want to scare humanity. Especially, right. Like, you know, like, him being one of the most powerful mutants, he at any time he can do, you know, I mean... You could send a broadcast out to the world's minds. What you can't get.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
You know,
I mean, but, honestly, if he can, he could touch the entire world with his message. How far away is he from planting in every single person's mind? Go jump off a bridge. Like,
right.
He could literally probably wipe out all of humanity if he wanted to.
Right.
Like, he is that powerful.
Well,
so.
And that's been brought up in comics and the movies that at any
right.
time he could just wipe out whoever he wanted. You know, just turn their mind to mush.
Right.
I felt that I felt there were, again, like we said before, the past isn't erased. I felt the tones of Magneto in this, especially towards the end of House of X. I felt the tones of the old Magneto, especially that last page where he's he's basically saying we are gods. That's the Magneto we've always known, you know. And Charles didn't say that.
No, but it feels like now that is the way he's thinking. Like, Magneto is basically, you know, like he's, I don't want to say he's become Charles's lapdog because he hasn't.
No, no.
But
I think they're all working together.
He's out there speaking Charles's message. Like, in every instance where Magneto was talking, he made it known that this was Charles's plan. Like, he was like the, you know, the first lieutenant and he's carrying out the orders.
Right.
You know, he just happened to agree with them, but he was, you know, anything he said, you get the sense that it was coming down from Charles. Like,
so what did you think of, I'm trying to like, when you said Charles's plan, I'm thinking along the lines of, it made me think of the appearance of Fantastic Four when they showed up and what they have, Sabretooth.
Right.
Because I guess he went on a rampage or something, so they...
Well, they were him and Toad and Mystique were breaking into Damage Incorporated.
That's right.
They were stealing some information that they were on a mission to retrieve some information from Damage Inc. You know, they get caught breaking in, the Fantastic Four confront them, and Sabretooth goes, you know, Sabretooth on them. And,
right.
You know, says, you guys get away, I'll hold these guys off, basically.
So Cyclops shows up to take Sabretooth back.
Right.
And they're like, no. Which I thought just that appearance alone was kind of interesting because it's like, I thought that was a glimpse of the mutants are separate from the rest of the Marvel Universe. Almost like they're like the Fantastic Four is like, all right, we got to deal with these mutants. You know what I mean? Like, they're on their own in New York and doing their thing.
It's kind of always been that way. The mutants have always been on the outside of the Marvel Universe. But what I thought was interesting with that is, you know, so part of Charles's deal, obviously, was amnesty for all mutants. That whatever crimes they committed, they were to be turned over to Krakoa to be dealt with. So, yeah, Cyclops comes through because, well, you know, Mystique and Toad get away.
Right.
But... Sabretooth gets held back because Sue throws a force field around him.
Yeah.
And keeps him from going to Krakoa. Cyclops comes through. They exchange pleasantries with the Fantastic Four.
Right.
There's that one panel where it looks like Sue's flirting with Scott for some reason.
Yeah.
And he says, okay, well, we're going to take Sabretooth back. And, you know, obviously Mr. Fantastic has an issue with that. Says, look, you know, he committed these crimes. And is your amnesty going to cover that? And Scott says, well, yes, it should cover that. Do you have a problem with it? And Mr. Fantastic says, yes, I do. But what I thought was interesting was that Scott says, well, okay. You know, he kind of puts his hands up and says, we'll leave him here, but we'll deal with it later in another way.
Right.
So you know that they're coming back and they're going to get him.
But that's what I meant by, like, they're on the outside, almost like the mutants are, like, they're against everybody else. Other superpower, like, I wouldn't be surprised, like, are they going to go up against, like, Spider-Man? Are they going to go up against...
Well, I didn't get the sense that they were against, like, it was a very pleasant interaction between Cyclops and the Fantastic Four. I didn't get the sense that they were against him necessarily, but Scott is definitely, he's defending his nation now.
Right.
So when it comes to a choice between the Fantastic Four and Krakoa, he's going to choose Krakoa. So I don't think they're necessarily looking to say we want to be enemies with all of the Marvel Universe.
I got the feel, maybe I'm wrong, but I got the feel like he put it.
You're wrong.
Yeah, I know. He put his hands up like, okay, I'll let him go now because for all he's outnumbered. If he had the numbers, I think he would have taken Sabretooth. I think they would. You know what I mean? Like that was a very, like you said, it seemed very amicable, but it was amicable because Scott was outnumbered. He can't beat the team.
Yeah, but I don't know. I didn't read it that way. I just, again, it looked to more like to me like he's a soldier in this army and he's saying this is above my pay grade. So I'm going to leave him with you. I'm going to go back and I'm going to let Charles deal with this because he's the one that gets paid to do these things. That's the way I read it. Like, I don't think they're going out of their way to make enemies of even anybody. You know, the heroes, the humans, whatever. I don't think, I like I said, I kind of read it as, look, I'm not here to be your enemy, but I'm through letting you guys step on us either.
Right.
Like, we're not going to be treated as second-class citizens anymore. Like, he has that point where he says, look, we fought our whole life for equality, and, you know, do you think we're just going to give it up this easily or whatever? And, you know, I don't know. I like I said, I read that a little bit differently than you did, but
well, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Right, to see where it plays out, because that is the scene that actually connects both books.
Yes,
because it's basically Mystique and Toad coming back to the other side in Powers of Ten with the information that Charles wants.
Right,
but again, this was a mission that was sanctioned by Charles himself. Like he's the one that sent them to get this information.
Right.
You don't know what it is yet. You don't necessarily know what the information is. But I really love the white page in between where it explained what Damage Incorporated was.
Yes.
And how basically it was holding all the technology that was created by Stark and Mr. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And how they always kept it out of everybody's hands because...
Well, how Stark did. They
Right. Well, they were each the beneficiary for the other.
Right.
So if something happened to Mr. Fantastic, all his stuff went to Tony.
Right.
And vice versa. But what happened is they both went missing or presumed dead, so the technicality kicked in and all this information became, I don't want to say public domain, but it fell into the hands of Damage Incorporated.
Right.
So I think it was just Charles trying to get back his...
Tech?
His stuff.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. Well, actually, it wouldn't have been Charles's stuff. I guess he was trying to get a hold of something that either Tony or...
Right.
We'll
find out later.
With. Right.
So, going over to Powers of Ten, I don't know. After reading that, I'm like, that one, I don't know where that's going. Because it takes place over 1,000 years.
Well, right. And that's why I wanted to kind of finish up with House first because, well, no, I'm just saying because House of X ends on a very positive outlook for the mutants. It looks like gotten everything. It looks like they've finally gotten everything they ever wanted. They've got their nation state. They've got a safe place to live. Everybody's living in harmony. All the evil X-Men or all the evil mutants and the good mutants are all living together. Everybody's happy. You got Logan rolling around in the grass with kids laughing. Like that's a scene I never thought I would see ever in the X-Men. So they have their perfect paradise. And then 1 week later, you get Powers of Ten and all that crap comes crashing to the ground.
Right.
Because you realize that what seemed like at the end of House number one, that they had an unassailable situation that was going to last them for the rest of their lives. Like every generation of mutants from here on out is going to be happy and safe and content. And you find out that less than 50 years later, it's gone. All that fell, you know, there is a perpetual war that's been raging for 50 years between the humans and the mutants. Both sides are taking heavy casualties left and right. You don't know how though. And that's the whole thing.
Right.
You don't really know what happened.
Right.
But it just felt like to me, like you didn't get to live this dream very long. you know, you're all happy for the X-Men.
Yeah.
And then 7 days later, it's gone. Like,
I thought, and that's what I thought was interesting about Powers is as confused as I was at the end of the book, I'm encouraged because I don't know of another book that read like that.
Yeah.
Where you got, what, four different chapters of the book, basically, which is each time you got a glimpse into each timeline.
Right.
But to be able to jump from timeline to timeline like that, how I am so interested in how this is going to play out in the rest of the. This is the second book of 12 here,
right?
Where now? What do we do in the next house? Do we go back to like year 10 and go back to that utopia?
So that's what I'm thinking because this is now set up to where we have four checkpoints that have been established. You have year zero, you have year 10, year 100, and year 1000. And you know where we are in each one of those points in time. Everything else now is just filling in the gaps. In a lot of ways, I hate stories like this, you know, where I know the end before the beginning.
But you want to see how you got there now.
But now I want to know, like.
Right.
Because from year 10 to year 100, the mutants that, like the X-Men that we know and love, quote unquote.
Yeah.
They got their happy ending because they're probably dead by the time Krakoa falls. Like, it probably falls during the next generation.
Some of them,
Because, you know, some of them. But, I mean, it's 40, 50 years later. You know, X-Men that were, like, Magneto's dead for sure, right? Well, no, he's not.
No,
we see him.
We see him.
But, which I don't know how because as far as I knew, Magneto doesn't have, like, an extended. The only one that should still be alive is Logan.
Right.
I don't know how Magneto's still alive, but you know, most of them have probably died off, and it's the next generation that fails in Krakoa. So we kind of want to see,
but they also they're spread out in the galaxy.
Well, by year 100, they are.
That's what I mean. From 10 right. to 100 to 1,000, it's like right. they're spread out.
Right.
Where is this going?
You hit year 100, and we're now in this, like, commonly seen dystopian future. It's basically like the Terminator.
Yes.
It's, you know, instead of man versus machines, it's mutants versus humans, but there's a lot of...
Well, it's the human machines versus the mutants.
Right, there's a lot of machine. Right, there's a lot of machines.
I think that's what they call it, isn't it? Human machines or...
Yeah, so it's some kind of AI, I don't know what. But the mutants... You start to fill in the backstory, they were trying to breed themselves. Like, they had Mr. Sinister involved somehow, and they were, like, they were being bred for war because Krakoa has fallen, I guess. And so you have these different types of mutants that are being created to wage war. You know, some of them are designed to be spies where they can't be interrogated. And
well, the first... Did I read it right that, like, the first incarnation that he had of mutants that he was designing, Mr. Sinister, was, like, they had one power, and then right. the second had multiple, and the third had, like had a bunch or right. something like that, but then they weren't living?
Right, something like the failure rate...
The failure rate was
increasing. Like, it went from 0.01% in, like, the first batch...
Yeah.
...to, like, 60-something percent in the fourth batch. Where,
but wasn't the third batch only, like, it was at 10? So that was a huge
right.
jump from 3
right.
to...
Right, it went from 0.1 to, like, 1.5 or something...
Right.
...to 10 to 67.5, I think. You know, I don't have all the numbers in front of me, but it was something like that. That part of it, again, felt... I was a little confused going through that because I really didn't get where the timeline... Like, it was only 100 years from the establishment of Krakoa.
Right.
Well, actually, it's really only 90 years because you go from year 10 to year 100.
Right.
So, like, I'm wondering how you got, like, four generations of mutants in 100 in 90 years.
It's almost four if you give 20 years to a generation.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I didn't follow it, you know, 100% on what was going on with that whole...
I honestly read it twice. I don't know. I think a lot of the confusion is because there's more to come.
Right.
You know, we could talk about it
maybe
later.
Maybe we're not supposed to...
Yeah, that. Well, I hope not.
Because I definitely haven't. But that's where I feel like what you were saying, where, like, this isn't, like, your average book for your average 11-year-old to be reading. Because I'm almost 50, and, like, I don't know what's going on. So...
And that... Well, we have, you know, 10 more books to go.
Right.
So, you know, it's...
But like I said, what I really... What I liked, or what stood out to me, was just the stark differences between the tones of both series. I think, and, you know, again, I could be wrong, but I think, like, all six issues of House of X are going to take place in that year 10.
Do you?
I think so. Whereas I feel like the Powers were going to jump around more and be filling in the gaps. You know, it could be completely wrong there. I don't know, but
yeah,
that's kind of how I feel like it's going to be set up. Because I don't know if we can get 10 more issues of them just bouncing back and forth between four different timelines. But again, I liked how in year 100, things were very bleak for the mutants. They were down to, what, like 8,000 mutants?
Yeah.
And, like, they were all living basically in space. And like, out of the 8,000, 7,992 of them were away. Because there's only eight of them living, like, in our solar system.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I guess
let me look. Total mutant population under the man-machine, that's what it was, man-machine supremacy. And it was believed less than 10,000. Right. And it's like eight...
Or out of that 10,000, 8,000 of them are living off-world.
Yeah, on Benevolence.
Right.
And the second mutant colony is located on the Shi'ara throne world of Chandelier.
Right.
Less than 2,000 mutants live there. So right. That's all. I just happened to open up to one of the white pages.
Right. But what I was going to say is, so by year 100, mutants are almost wiped out, basically. But then by year 1,000, and again, we don't know how they get there between that 900 years, but it seems like the mutants have bounced back. Like,
right.
I don't know if we can determine that they won the war, but it seems like they did, because it looks like by year 1,000 the mutants are there, but humanity is gone.
Right.
So, but did they win and it, like, wipe out humanity? You don't really know, but
well, you only in the year one in that one year 1,000, you only see that one character.
Right.
One.
Right. That's what I'm saying. You don't really know what's going on. He might be the only person, period.
He, like, I wasn't sure what it
or,
was.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
You know.
I don't know either, but...
But that is the one that ends with the depiction of Adam and Eve.
Right.
And obviously they don't say that, but it's... That's so interesting. Like,
it just makes you wonder what happened in between.
How and then where did Adam and Eve come? Like, does it just what goes around comes around? Did the mutants?
Well, it's like that Battlestar Galactica where it's all happened before and it will all happen again.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's like, are we starting over again 1,000 years from now?
Right.
And, you know, basically getting another chance. We, you know.
Yeah.
Don't know.
That's. I don't know.
But it just makes me wonder, though, like, what the relevance is of all these future... Because, again, I'm just wildly speculating here, but knowing what comes after both of these are done, like House of X and Powers of Ten are both six-issue miniseries. When they're done, we get an ongoing X-Men book and a New Mutants book and Excalibur book, and I would assume those all take place in current time, like in current day, year 10.
Yeah.
All those books aren't taking place in the future. So the status quo is going to be year 10 forward, you know, when we get to all the X books in 6 months or whenever we get
right.
them in 3 months. So how much of that future timeline are we going to see going forward after these miniseries are done? You know, I don't know what we're going to get out of any of that stuff. Because... You know, again, just going back to, and I hate to say what we've always had before, but all these books have all taken place in modern day times.
Yeah.
I can't imagine we're going to get a New Mutants book that takes place in year 1,000. You know, it wouldn't make sense.
Right.
So somewhere by the end of this miniseries, we're going to have a status quo somewhere where we can just tell regular ongoing monthly stories with these characters. I just don't know how we're getting there because
No,
the way
I know.
These two books, the way these two books started, you know, you don't know what's going to happen by the end of issue 12 of this thing. So
I don't know what's going to happen by the end of issue, well, three.
Two, right.
What did you think of the artwork?
So I thought it was, I liked the artwork in House a little better.
Okay.
Pepe Larraz did the art in House of X, and I thought the art was great in that book.
Yes. I liked it in both of them.
I was just saying, I don't, and that's not to say that the art was bad, and I can't remember the artist's name. I think you have it in front of you, I think, but.
Silva?
Silva.
Oh, that's right. Silva? Okay.
Yeah, Silva. It was good in both, but I don't know. I thought I liked the art in, like, in House of X, I thought it was, you know, again, I hate to say realistic, but they seemed a little bit more realistic drawing. Like, in Powers of Ten, the beginning pages with Xavier, it kind of felt like you had those little beady eyes. Like,
it was a little more cartoonish.
More stylized and a little bit more cartoonish.
Yes.
But not bad. Like I said, not in a bad way at all. But the styles were different. And I felt like in House of X, it was drawn a little bit more, you know, realistically and a little bit less cartoony. But overall, I mean, the art is great in both, and it's very, very detailed work in both books.
Right.
You know, again, I know you mentioned it last week, but, you know, Hickman was very involved in the art direction for both of these stories. Either where he was explicitly writing it as he was writing the book and he was explaining panel for panel what he wanted, or they were communicating back and forth during the art process, because there's definitely things that it looks like he wanted to make sure were communicated through the art.
Yes.
You know, in both of these books. So I think the collaboration between the writer and the artist was, you know, pretty solid in both of these books. And I think sometimes that's not always the case.
There were a couple of panels that I really liked where they did that. They blurred it.
Yeah.
And then I thought that was really cool, like the action scene. So it almost gave it that 3D effect.
Right.
And that was in both books. I noticed it in Powers. I thought it was pretty cool how they did that. I hadn't seen that before. But yeah, the artwork I thought was really, really strong in both. And like you said, it really plays to the story.
It does. Like I said, both books had the quote-unquote white pages that you had to pay attention to. I feel like in Powers, they were even a little bit more important to read than they were in House.
It's because it's so confusing. you're looking for answers.
Right.
You know, you're just reading, like, maybe this will answer the question. And it's like, and I feel bad because the first book was so enjoyable. And the second book, because it's so confusing, I felt frustrated. And I know, I'm sure it'll play out, but it's like by the end of it, you're like, where's this going? There's so, like, which storyline are we going to follow here? How is this, like, how is Powers going to continue on? Like, I mean, God forbid we get, you know, Powers of 10 in, you know, book two, and it's like 2,000 years.
Right.
And then 4,000, and you're like, oh no,
it's year 25 and yeah. Year,
it's like,
year 75. I don't think we're gonna get that. I feel like he's established his timelines, but you're right. I thought after reading House of X last week that I had questions, but I didn't really have questions at all, because I realized this week now I have questions.
Last week
I didn't know what questions were, now I do, because I feel a lot less prepared for what's coming after this one than I did before.
That's a great comment, because maybe after the next week's book, we'll be left with so many more questions that this book will be answered.
Right.
You know, and it's like, but I actually feel like, remember, like, so last week we were talking about, when we talked about House, we were saying like, oh, well, maybe these questions will be answered in Powers.
Right.
And they weren't. But yet the other book still feels like so much like, oh, I understand it better.
Right.
Just because the other one is so much harder to understand. Yeah. It's like no questions were answered, but just seems easier.
Also, the thing that struck me too is that, again, when you read House of X, you got the sense between all the mutants that used to be, you know, enemies with each other, that it was one big kumbaya. Like, everybody was getting along, and it was one big happy family. But when you get into Powers, even before you start jumping around in the timelines, you have that scene with Mystique and Magneto and Charles. And you realize that it's not that idyllic.
Yes.
Even in that timeline. Because whatever mission they were on, you know, Charles sent them to Damage Inc. to get this information. When they get back, you know, first of all, you have Magneto and Raven, and they're talking. And, you know, talking about the mission, and she's a little upset that they left Sabretooth behind. So you already get the sense that there's some grumblings going on. But then Charles happens, you know, you don't see him off in the corner, but he's overhearing the conversation. And he asks for the information. And Mystique is like, well, I have it, but it doesn't come for free. He says, oh, well, working for the good of all mutant kind isn't good enough for you? And
right.
She says, no. And so then he says, okay, well, that's good, because I got something for you, too. He throws her a phone or whatever, and I guess it has her mission on it. And she says, oh, really? And he says, yeah, working for the good of mutant kind, you know, doesn't come for free or something.
Right, right.
So he throws it right back at her. But, yeah, I thought that was cool. But it did set up that things aren't all rosy in Krakoa.
Yeah, in the mutant world.
Because, again, like I mentioned earlier, in Krakoa, they're safe from the outside world.
Right.
So if Krakoa falls, it came from within. So they are their own downfall. And I think they start to say that because they, you know, they were relying on Mr. Sinister, who, you know, again, was always bad guy number one or bad guy number two behind Apocalypse, you know, and they're counting on him to be their genetic, run their genetic program. And he stabs him in the back, you know, and they say that everything fell because he couldn't be trusted. So all along, you know, for 50 years of the X-Men, you always got the impression that the mutants would be just fine if it wasn't for the dang humans.
Right.
You know, always trying to mess with them. And then, just like every other species, when they get it their own way and they're left to their own devices, they are their own downfall in the end. It was never the humans after all, you know? Somehow they end up going to war with the humans, but that's after Krakoa has fallen, I guess, and they're now probably having to try to reintegrate themselves back into the main society or whatever. Again, I'm just inferring that, but it seems like that's, if Krakoa falls, then they have to go somewhere. And I think that's what will probably sparks the conflict with the humans again. I don't know, like I said, I'm reading into that they are their own, they're the seeds of their own destruction. Whatever happens to them, I think, you know, is their doing.
Yeah, but the thing is where we know the timeline, do you think that, like you're saying, like, they fall from within, but I think there's a war, they're going to obviously battle the humans, and that's why they end up having to leave the planet. Because they lose, they lose the battle with the human machine war, and then that's why they leave the planet.
Right, and, but I'm thinking that conflict arises because they have to leave Krakoa because it falls, and like I said, they have to have a home. Like, now they no longer have a home, and they're trying to reintegrate back into the rest of Earth. And now there's conflict with the humans, who probably have gotten used to them not being anywhere because they've all been at Krakoa.
What's funny is, X-Men was founded back in the 60s. The idea was a metaphor for, you know, minorities.
Right. Exactly.
Well, here we are now, and the X-Men have segregated themselves to an island in the Pacific.
Right, right. Whereas, again, they were created to fight segregation, and they
segregated themselves here, which is kind of interesting. It's like, is that going to blow up in their face? And maybe that's what happens. You know, like, we feel better being with our own kind when it's like, no, we're better off trying to. Maybe they, I don't know. We're wildly speculating on where these 12 books are going to go.
That's what we do, though, right?
Yep. But, oh yeah, clearly. I don't know. Anything else?
No, well, I mean, I feel like if we wanted to, we could go on for a day and a half, because there's a ton of stuff there, but most of it's just us
speculating.
Asking questions that we don't have the answers to.
Right. So. Well, and, you know, by Wednesday, we're going to have another book.
Right. And we'll have a few more. Well, hopefully we'll have a few more. Again, after today, I don't feel like I have any more answers. I have less answers than I had before.
Yeah.
So, like you said, who knows what we're going to have next week.
What I think is funny is I think we're going to have a hard time not talking about this. I think this is going to be one. It's a book a week, so it's not hard to do. So it'll probably be in our recommend. You know, we'll talk about it after recommended reading
probably every week. Yeah. But maybe not in so much detail.
No, not at all. And then, you know, maybe in a month we'll touch base and do another episode like this.
Yeah.
Maybe we can get Slade in then.
Yeah, maybe he'll have some answers for us.
I know. That's. I was hoping we could have gotten him this week, but didn't work out. But
because,
schedule-wise.
Even from the brief conversation we had last week, I mean, his X-Men knowledge is quite a bit deeper than mine because he was spouting off things that I didn't really know or
right.
Remember.
Well, it. But then we also get Ernie's too because him and Ernie have the conversation like you and I have.
Right.
I mean that'll be a good time. We should definitely do that.
Although again,
in a month,
that information isn't necessarily relevant to this story because you don't need to have it. But he obviously, I could tell by the questions he was asking last week that, you know, he's got a lot more X-Men knowledge, remembers a lot more than I do about some of this stuff. So,
are we good?
I think so.
All right. Did you read it? What do you think of it? If you didn't read it, hey, thanks for listening to the whole thing, the spoilers.
You don't need to now.
Well, no, you really do. Even if you didn't read it, there's so much more detail and stuff in every page. It's definitely worth, I'd almost say, even if you haven't
I don't know if we even did it justice, really. I mean, there's so much we probably left out that, you know, you definitely want to read it.
What did we miss? What do you agree with? You know, hit us up on Twitter at brightside_chat. Email us at thebrightsidechat@gmail.com. That would be, I mean, this is going to be one that John and I will be talking about for weeks.
Yeah.
Every week, pretty much, so.
Tune in for more of our incoherent ramblings.
Yeah.
On Powers of X.
All right. That is.
Yeah.
All right. We will see you on Thursday with our comic news.
All right.
Close up the store. Oh, no. You can keep the store open. I got to get to work. Hey, Fred. Thanks for listening to the Bright Side Chat. We have a few sponsors who we'd like to mention. Arkham Comics and Games of Pearland, Texas. You can find them at arkhamcomicsandgames.com, one word. A. Pennyworth's Comics and Collectibles in Matthews, North Carolina. You can find them at apennyworthscomics.com. Apothesis Comics and Lounge in St. Louis, Missouri. You can find them at apothesiscomicsstl.com. Friendly Neighborhood Comics of Bellingham, Mass. You can find them at friendlycomics.com. Legends Comics and Games of Littleton, Mass. You can find them at legendscomics.com, comics with an X. And also Rubber Chicken Comics of Bellingham, Mass. And you can find them at rubberchickencomics.com. So what's cool is all of our sponsors have agreed to give our listeners a 10% discount on any comics we talk about in our podcast. So if you hear it in our podcast, just go into any of the stores that we've mentioned and tell them you listened to the Bright Side Chat and you heard about this comic there, and they will give you a 10% discount on any of those books. Hopefully you guys can take advantage of that, and thank you to all of our sponsors. Thanks for listening.